Hi, my name is Harold Horgan, CEO of the York Group. For more than 20 years, we have been working with ISVs to help them develop and implement their business strategies. One of the biggest challenges facing ISVs today is adapting their business model to cloud-based technologies being sold on a subscription basis. We have worked with thousands of ISVs worldwide, giving us a unique insight into the issues you have to deal with. Microsoft has asked me to share our experiences through this series of webinars. There are a total of 11 modules covering almost every aspect of the cloud business model, and combined they are intended to give you the guidance you need to be successful in the cloud. This is one of three modules focused on channels. Despite what many analysts have predicted, channels are an important part of the cloud business model. This is especially true in the enterprise market, where the complexity and length of the sales cycle, combined with services that are usually required during the implementation, make web-based sales impractical. We're going to cover a number of topics in this webinar. First, will channels continue to be relevant? A lot of analysts think that channels will go away. Then, what are the channel options for cloud solutions? As you will see, there are more options available for the cloud than there are for on-premise. What are the guidelines for identifying the resellers? What is their role? What do they look like? And finally, I will explain why channels work and why they don't. If you understand this, the 10-step recruitment process we go through in the next webinar will make a lot of sense. So, will channels disappear? A lot of analysts predict that they will be disintermediated, a fancy word meaning that there will be no need for them because business will be done through electronic channels, such as marketplaces and direct sales from vendor websites. If you were alive and reading the trade press in the late 1990s, this probably sounds familiar. During the dot-com and e-commerce bubble days, the analysts predicted that stores would disappear. There would be no more need for bricks and mortar because everyone would be doing the shopping online. But here we are, 15 years after the dot-com bubble, and less than 90% of retail sales worldwide take place in a store. People might do their research online, but most people still like to go into a store where they can see and touch the products. The ultimate paradox of this is Apple. Great technology, often revolutionary, and yet they get most of their sales through retail stores. Microsoft and other tech companies, including Google and Amazon, are building retail stores. The same will be true for channels. Yes, there will be some solutions that people sign up for online, but in the business market, customers want a trusted advisor who can guide them through the many choices, help integrate new solutions with their existing infrastructure, and provide post-sale support. Channels are not going away anytime soon. But channel requirements will be different from ISV to ISV. On-premise ISVs that haven't yet made the decision to move to the cloud and have not been using partners for their on-premise solution. For them, the biggest barrier is often the uncertainty around the impact on their business as they move into new markets with a new go-to-market strategy. ISVs that have made the move to the cloud and have an existing channel want to know what changes they need to make to their channel program. Can they use the same partners, or do they need to recruit new ones? Do they need to change the discount program? And born in the cloud ISVs that don't know what a channel is, they often think that posting their solution on a marketplace is all they need to do to sell to the enterprise market. They need an end-to-end channel program that covers the internal processes. They will need to know how to recruit the right partners and how to manage them once they are on board. The three webinars covering channel development should provide the guidance they need. I mentioned during the introduction that there are more ways to market for cloud solutions than there are for on-premise solutions. The challenge is to select the path to market that is the best for your solution and to avoid channel conflict in the process. Let's take a look at the potential ecosystem for cloud solutions. We will still have the traditional channels that we have for on-premise. Resellers, project services, what we referred to as systems integrators in the past, and distributors. The role they play might change, and some of them may disappear, but these categories are here to stay. But as you move to the cloud, you will find many more options. I will cover a few of these in more detail later in this webinar, but this will give you a quick overview of how the cloud ecosystem is evolving. Managed service providers, or MSPs as they are often called, could become the dominant channel for SaaS solutions that target small and mid-sized businesses. Pure play resellers are companies that were formed to focus on the recurring revenue model. They only work with SaaS products and for the most part do not build up a big professional services staff. Hosters such as Rackspace are virtual distributors, providing infrastructure as well as sales and marketing enablement services to ISVs. syndicators and aggregators bundle together multiple solutions that fit together. For example, Office 365 and a practice management solution for doctors and clinics. Marketplaces, which I will talk more about, have the potential to become a leading platform for cloud sales. It is still early days, but there are a few notable successes and many that are starting to grow in importance. And finally, affiliate marketing, which I will also come back to, can be a low-cost way to generate referrals. They are not a channel in the classic sense, since they don't actually sell the solution to an end user, but they can be an effective channel to reach and funnel prospective clients to you. Let's take a closer look at marketplaces. This is the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, the largest marketplace in the world, where you can buy just about anything. Over time, marketplaces will emerge as an important part of the channel ecosystem for cloud solutions as well, but in the cloud, not in Istanbul. But there is one thing that marketplaces are not. They are not an answer to your prayers, a pot of gold that magically appears at the end of the rainbow. You cannot just list your product on a marketplace and wait for the orders to flood in. Someone has to do the marketing. Either you do it, or you pay the marketplace or your partners in your channel ecosystem to do it. There are no shortcuts to success. So, how will the marketplaces make money? This is still an emerging business model, but the commercial terms usually involve one or more of the following components. First, some marketplaces will charge setup fees, especially if there's a lot of upfront integration involved. There's often a listing fee per product, but the amounts are fairly low. Where the marketplaces want to make money, and where you want them to make money, is on commissions based on revenues. The typical percentage that is emerging is 20%. This can be higher for specialty sites and less for marketplaces that are more like listing directories. We're also seeing the rapid emergence of regional managed service providers. The typical MSP has 50 clients with 20 endpoints, which can be PCs, tablets, phones, and they manage everything for the clients, which are usually too small to afford a full-time IT person internally. From a channel perspective, there are three primary benefits that they provide. The first is geographic proximity. They will be within a 1 to 2 hour drive of most of the clients so that they can drive out in the morning if on-site services are required, do the work, and drive back in the evening. Second, domain expertise. This can be around vertical markets or specific types of solutions such as security or CRM. And finally, they already have a business model based on subscriptions, so they don't have all of the transition issues to deal with that can be such a challenge for traditional resellers. I mentioned that affiliate marketing can be a cost-effective way to generate new leads. There are many categories of affiliate marketers. It could be industry websites, bloggers, other vendors. What they have in common is that they have a lot of traffic coming to their website, and they provide information and content that would be of interest to those visitors. By definition, this is volume-based, anonymous marketing. People come to their websites and they don't have to register for basic access, so no one really knows who they are until they do something to engage with the website. Affiliate partners are usually compensated using a variable structure, and I'll give you some examples on the next slide. It is a click-through model. A visitor sees a link to their website, or a banner ad, or a white paper they want to download, and they click on it. Ideally, this will bring them to your website. You have to be able to track where they came from so that you can pay your affiliate marketing partner. But be selective. There are tens of thousands of affiliate marketers, and not all of them have business models or reputations that you want to be associated with. Protect your brand by being selective. Here are some of the compensation options, and they all should reflect the value of the customer that comes to you through the affiliate marketer. There is usually some kind of fee per click-through. There can also be a commission component, in which case the fee is reduced. We would suggest that you limit commissions from a unique visitor to 1 year. Another popular compensation model has activities-based fees, and this is particularly good for complex products where you need multiple touches with a prospect. In this model, you assign a value for specific activities. For example, a low value for an anonymous click-through, something more if they register their name and email address, a bit more if they subscribe to your newsletter, even more if they sign up for a free trial. In total, the compensation you pay to an affiliate marketer for an actual sale, not just for activity on your website, should be no more than 3 to 5% of the overall transaction. So as you can see, if it drives volume for you, the cost of sales is quite low. Resellers will continue to be an important part of the food chain for business-to-business solutions. But in most major vendor ecosystems, fewer than 20% of channel partners have made a significant investment in building a cloud business, so you have to be selective. As you go out into the market to look for reseller partners, you have to be very aware of where they are in the adoption cycle. There are basically four categories. On-premise service providers that have no interest in the cloud. They see their business as being installation and support of hardware, networking gear, and related software, and have no intention of changing. Resellers that claim that they are in the cloud, but are still focused on installation and implementation with no real business model for cloud solutions. Pure play resellers are companies set up to sell subscription licenses. They want to build up a big book of recurring revenues without investing in professional services beyond what it takes to implement a solution. The final category is where a lot of traditional resellers will end up. They are perfectly happy to sell and install on-premise or in the cloud, depending on the client requirements. Because cloud resellers are still in the minority, it is important to identify the best candidates. And here's what you should look for. First, they should have an existing cloud-based model that seems to be working. Second, there are a range of services that they could be providing. And as you can see, they don't include installation and implementation, which have traditionally been a big part of their business. The good news about these services from the reseller's perspective is that they tend to be higher value services than the services associated with hardware and network deployments. And finally, they should have a compensation model for their salespeople that pays them for selling subscriptions, which is a lot different than selling an upfront license in some boxes. Salespeople don't get excited about collecting commissions on $10 per user per month, so prospective partners need to have figured out something more attractive. Now, let's go back to the slide we showed in the first webinar on the changing business fundamentals in the cloud environment to give you an idea of where the different channel partners fit in. Market players, hosters, and distributors will have more of an impact at the lower end of the food chain, while resellers and project services partners will continue to dominate in the market for more complex enterprise solutions. The mid-market will be a hybrid, but with increasing use of automated sales and distribution models, leaving less room for traditional resellers. As I've mentioned previously, the York Group has been working with software vendors for more than 20 years to help them develop and execute their go-to-market strategies. A lot of this has involved channel partners, and over the years we have learned what works, what doesn't, and why. These fundamentals are the same, regardless of how the solution is delivered. The main reason partnerships don't produce meaningful revenues is because there is a mismatch in the expectations from the very beginning of the relationship. Let's start by looking at what a channel partner expects to get from the relationship. First, they want products that sell themselves. They also want lots of services that produce revenues and margins for them, but not necessarily you, the vendor. They don't want any competition, not from you selling directly, and not from other partners. They want you to do all of the lead generation for them. And on top of that, they expect to get big, fat margins. Seems perfectly reasonable, doesn't it? Now, let's look at what you expect from the relationship. You probably want partners that sell lots of your solution and never call you for support. Now, let's convert this into a Venn diagram to see how much the expectations overlap. As you can see, not so much. And this is why channel relationships so often turn out to be unproductive. You and your partners want the other party to do more and get less out of it. So, why bother? If the failure rate is so high, why even think about building a partner network? First, a successful channel program will produce higher revenues. Good business partners tend to be consistent, year in and year out, growing revenues. Once you are part of their core business, they produce a lot of revenues with little effort and support from you. It also gives you shorter time to market. It is the partners' relationships with their existing customers that drive the initial transactions, much more than the technology. So the key is to recruit partners that already have customers that need your product. If you are not recruiting partners that can close their first sales from their existing client base, it is unlikely the relationship will work. And better margins. When the channel works the way it is supposed to work, your partners do their own sales and marketing and provide first and second level technical support. This means that the revenues flowing back to you are almost pure margin. Paying the channel a 40 to 50% discount for on-premise software is a very good deal as long as they are doing what they are supposed to do. On the other hand, a bad partner sells infrequently and kills your margin because they need you to help them with selling to and supporting the client. The combination of increased revenues, quicker ramp-up, and better margins will have a big impact on the value of your company, whether you're looking for funding or planning to sell your business. At the end of the day, there are only two channel models: those that work and those that don't. When you have a performing partner, you are likely to be a strategic product for them. They do their own sales and marketing, they provide first and second level technical support, and they produce significant revenues for you every year. On the other hand, when you end up as a portfolio product, one that is a nice to have for your partner, they tend to be reactive, and you find yourself feeding them leads, participating in the sales process, and providing more technical support than you had expected. If you can recruit partners who see you as being strategic, or convert your existing portfolio partners to strategic partners, the improvement in revenues is an order of magnitude. It's not incremental. Now, if it is so important to be a strategic product, what does that really mean? First, your partner should have someone dedicated, or at least designated, to sell your product. One person who gets to know your product well enough to sell it on their own. The preference is to have a full-time salesperson working only on your product, but that is a big investment for many partners, and you may start off with one half of a resource. The partner should submit a marketing plan spelling out the monthly marketing initiatives that they will be launching in order to build a pipeline for your product. The marketing plan is discussed in greater detail in other sections, but it is a key document in showing the partner's commitment. Finally, you want to be a meaningful part of their business. If you are less than 1% of their revenues, even if that might be a few hundred thousand dollars, you are expendable. If their business model changes, the salesperson leaves, or the economy slows down, there is a good chance they either drop your product or let it become a portfolio product. But if you can become 10 to 15% of the revenues, including the services and other pull-through revenue that they produce from your product, you will become part of their survival toolkit. Now, let's look at the relationship between you and your partners. When you build a network of partners, the objective is to have them work as a team, energetically, enthusiastically working together, all pulling in the same direction. The reality is usually different, and if you already have resellers, you will probably recognize some of these profiles. Often they are lazy, not doing anything to promote or sell your product, expecting you to do the heavy lifting. Or they are proactive, but not in a positive sense. They are constantly complaining that you don't do enough for them. They need more leads. They want more market development funds. There's too much competition, blah, 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 blah. But they don't do anything proactively to help you be successful. And then there are the ones that are cute and fun to have around, the ones you enjoy going out for a drink with, but end up being more of a nuisance than a productive partner. It is up to you to be a good pack leader and provide the direction your partners need. There are three basic elements of leading your pack. As you will see, training and managing your channel partners is very similar to training and managing your puppy at home. So, exercise. This is the partners doing what they are supposed to be doing: actively marketing, selling, and supporting your product. This has to be the number one priority. Discipline. This is bringing accountability to the relationship. Like the old saying that if it can't be measured, it can't be managed. This part of the program includes pipeline reporting, sales targets, marketing plans, annual reviews, etc. The final element is affection, the reward system, including discounts, spiffs, marketing funds, and so on. Combined, these are the three core elements of a partner program, and in this order of importance: exercise, discipline, and affection. Too many times, ISVs reverse the order, thinking that they can buy the loyalty of their partners by offering money, leads, and support in order to get their commitment. The problem with that approach is that you reward bad behavior, and it is almost impossible to change the pattern once it has been established. Almost every company that has recruited resellers has partners that don't actively sell their product. In some cases, the majority of partners are bad partners. So why do you keep them? It's because you live in the hope that they will become productive. We illustrate this point with a story about Uncle Ned. A family took their Uncle Ned to a psychiatrist and told him that they had a real problem with their Uncle Ned's delusions. He thought he was the chicken. He walked around the house clucking, pecking the ground with his nose and flapping his arms. "How long has this been going on?" asked the psychiatrist. 10 years, they responded. My goodness, explained the doctor. 10 years? Why haven't you brought him in earlier? Well, we could really use the eggs. And this is the point with resellers that don't sell. You hang on to them in the hope that someday they will actually produce some sales, but it won't happen. They may walk like a chicken and sound like a chicken, but they're never going to lay any eggs. So why doesn't the reseller sell your product after the contract has been signed? They may have agreed to put a full-time salesperson on your product, told you that they would spend money on a marketing budget, but as the months go by, you never hear from them. What happened? The reality is most resellers like to carry a large portfolio of products, just in case someone should ask for a product with specific functionality. However, most of them have built their business on the strength of 2 or 3 strategic products, and these products might generate 80 to 90% of the revenues. This means that all of the internal processes are focused on these products: sales, marketing, tech support, order processing. When you walk in the door and want to be strategic product number 3 and not portfolio product number 31, you have to change their existing processes. You will be a disruption to the way they are running their business today. And the more of a disruption you are, the less likely it is that they will be successful. We'll talk more about this in the recruitment webinar, but it is essential that you match up as closely as possible with what they are already doing. If they have to learn a new technology and sell it to clients they don't already have, you're setting yourself up for failure. It always comes down to selling. Companies don't sell, people do. And if you can't get a named salesperson within the partner organization selling your product, it doesn't matter what the company owner agreed to in terms of targets. The problem is that salespeople sell what they know how to sell. They probably have 1 or 2 products that they are comfortable with and that generate most of their commissions. Like most things, getting the salesperson on board is a 3-step process. First, as already mentioned, they should be talking to prospects from their client base before they sign the agreement with you. This allows them to start with a friendly sale, not a cold call, so they won't be expected to be going through all of the front-end work of getting someone interested. Every reseller has strategic accounts that they can call up as long as the solution is a good fit with their core activity. Once the contract has been signed, they should go through your structured sales training program. Now they will be able to see how their informal sales process with a friendly account or two fits into a more formal process. Finally, if the partner is doing what they are supposed to be doing as a strategic partner, they will have implemented an activity-based marketing plan. By the time the salesperson comes home from training, there should be a pipeline of leads that he can take through the sales process he has just learned. This will reinforce the training and produce the initial sales the partner organization needs to justify more investments in marketing. By the end of this 3-step process, the salesperson should be trained and confident enough to sell your solution. There is one last insight that I want to share with you. As an ISV, you may think you have spent years sweating blood to build the world's greatest product, and the resellers have the easy part. All they have to do is go out and sell it. Unfortunately, channel partners don't have the same view of the world. They see you as more of a risk than an opportunity because they are being asked to invest their time and resources to market and sell your product. The reseller sees 3 types of risk. The first, market risk. This is the risk that they invest in marketing and the product doesn't sell, for whatever reason. It could be the wrong timing, the wrong client base, the wrong message, but it doesn't work. Resellers accept this as part of the business model, and they get a discount to take on this risk. A bigger risk to a partner is the exit risk. This is the risk that the reseller does too well. He is sending millions back to the ISV, who terminates the agreement and opens an office to sell direct. Or the vendor does well in several countries and is acquired by IBM or Microsoft or Oracle, who have their own existing partner networks. So the partner often sees a 3 to 5 year window of opportunity to make money. Year 1, they invest in sales and marketing, and if they're lucky, they'll break even. Years 2 and 3, sales ramp up and they see some profits. And if they are lucky, they will make some real money in years 4 and 5. Anything beyond that, they can't count on. The tough thing for them is that the better they do, the more likely it is that they will lose their rights to the product. So there's actually a disincentive to doing too well. It's better for them to send $500,000 per year to the ISV than $2 million, because $500,000 isn't enough to make it worth your while to open up a local office. The third level of risk, and perhaps the greatest risk for a reseller, is you, the vendor. This is the risk that you don't know what you are doing. You don't have a support program. You don't respond to tech issues. It is the risk that Hans goes into Deutsche Bank, their longtime client, which likes the product. They do a technical evaluation, coming back with 6 pages of questions, which the partner sends to you, and you say, oh, no way, too much work, too much detail required, whatever. Once this happens, Hans will never try again. The resellers take a lot of risk. They put their reputations on the line, and you have to recognize this. If they don't have full confidence that you are going to be a good partner for them, you will be relegated to being a portfolio product. When recruiting partners, it is important to remember that partners aren't making a decision based on a technology. They are making a decision based on how they perceive you as a potential partner. In many ways, you are the product. It's not your technology they are buying, it's the relationship with you. You have to package yourself and sell yourself to the reseller who is your potential client. We like to use the analogy of a direct sales process, where you look at recruiting a partner much like you look at selling your product. First, give them a reason to buy. Show them that you can be a good partner. This is why having a strong channel program in place before contacting prospective partners is so important. Next, during the recruitment process, set the right expectations and make sure that you can meet or exceed them as the relationship progresses. Never oversell and underdeliver. Finally, once the contract has been signed, provide great after-sales support. Be a good partner. In this way, you will sell the relationship in exactly the same way you sell your product, except that when you sell your product, even if it is a $200,000 or $300,000 sale, it's just a sale. When you go through a channel, one partner should close multiple transactions per year, which means that a productive partner will have a much bigger impact on your business than even your best enterprise clients. You should put at least as much effort and structure into recruiting channel partners as you do in selling direct. Now, a quick review of the content we have gone through in this webinar. Despite what many analysts are predicting, channels will continue to be an important part of the ecosystem for cloud solutions. As a vendor, you will have a wider choice of go-to-market options, but you will need to select what is best for you. And when you're using multiple channels, make sure you limit the potential for conflict. You need to find partners who see you as being strategic to their business. We show you how to do this in the webinar covering our 10-step recruitment process. At the end of the day, partners are looking for a business opportunity supported by a vendor who knows how to be a good partner. They are buying you, not your product. So thank you for taking time to view this webinar. As mentioned during the introduction, it is part of a series of webinars that Microsoft has put together to help you be successful with your cloud solution. So I would encourage you to view other webinars that cover topics that are important to you. You should also feel free to contact me if there are any questions or issues that I can help you with.